Cause that's the bottom line.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, Election Day, November 6th edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. On today's show, Kentucky mourns the loss to Georgia over the weekend. But are they a football school now? We have a reference that says they're not. Today's not election day, it's the opening of college basketball season. And the biggest game in America involves Kentucky. We'll look at college football and the NFL going forward. An average Joe who almost made it on the track at Churchill Downs over the weekend. And of course, we will go over tonight's college basketball Mac Daddy Stogie locks of the night. So let's go.
They're off.
She's Asian, she's loose, and she's fat. I hit the trifecta!
If you've mastered the art of win, place, and show wagers, let's try a trifecta.
Creating a trifecta of joint smoking power.
The trifecta, the three biggest stories of local sports. But we'll relegate it to two for today. Just a win and place effort. Georgia 34, Kentucky 17 over the weekend. It wasn't close, ladies and gentlemen. Georgia outgained Kentucky 444-310. And the most telling statistic, of course, average yards per rushing attempt. Georgia 6.6, Kentucky 2.4, with their pseudo Heisman Trophy candidate, Benny Snell, 20 for 73. Hey, look who played a good game. Touchdown Terry Wilson with a 72 QBR, 23 of 29 for 226. Too bad he still rates 13th out of 14 SEC quarterbacks in QBR, but Georgia did exactly what we've been daring people to do all year to Kentucky. Make sure they stop the run, and let's see if this touchdown Terry guy is worth a darn, and more often than not, he hasn't been. So the magical mystery ride is over for Kentucky. So much for that trip to Atlanta. So much for that trip in the college football playoff. So much for beating Alabama for the SEC championship. I will say this. I grew up here in Kentucky, moved to Atlanta for over 20 years, realized what a laughingstock Kentucky is in football, and since returning, have seen some down days for the Cats. But last week was something I've never seen in my lifetime involving Kentucky football. Hope, optimism, and an actual belief that they were going to win the SEC East. Now they didn't, but that's okay. But the question came up last week, is Kentucky a football school now? Because nobody was talking about the massive Kentucky and Duke game tonight. People were all talking about Kentucky versus Georgia in football. I've said this a million times. I guarantee you, if you go ask the Kentucky athletic director what he would rather see, an SEC Eastern Division championship in football or a national championship in basketball, I'll guarantee you he says an SEC Eastern Division championship in football. It's more cash money, baby, whether you realize it or not. But is Kentucky a basketball school? Or have they turned into a football school now? I hearken back to 2007. Kansas University went 12-1 under big fat Mark Mangino. By the way, where is he today? He's not even coaching today, I don't think. Kansas went 12-1 in 2007 with an Orange Bowl victory. That was pre-college football playoff, of course. Do you think there were whispers in Kansas about them becoming a football school? Oh, I'm sure there were. But guess what? It didn't last very long. Within 2 years, Mark Mangino had gotten himself in trouble. He was fired. Charlie Weiss was in town. And the program has now fired its coach again just yesterday. At schools like Duke, at Kansas, at Kentucky, football success is possible. But it's very fleeting. And you better enjoy it while you can. Because history tells us that's exactly what happens every single time. So now that Kentucky's college football playoff aspirations are over, what do you do now? This team is 7-2. They're not going to the playoff. But let's look at that schedule. They go to Tennessee this week. They started out as a 3.5-point favorite. They're already up to a 4-point favorite at Tennessee. Who saw that coming before the year started? We talked about the stars aligning for Kentucky. Tennessee has been down. Louisville is as down as they've been in forever. Clemson's still scoring touchdowns on them. And according to ESPN FBI, a 66% chance of winning this week at Tennessee, an 89% chance of winning next week at home to Middle Tennessee, and an 88% chance of winning at Louisville. By the way, who would have predicted before the season that Kentucky would have the same chance, numerically, of beating Middle Tennessee at home than they would have beating Louisville on the road? That's crazy talk. That doesn't tell you how great Middle Tennessee is. That tells you how terrible Louisville is. Talk about a coach on the hot seat. How does Petrino survive this? Your guess is as good as mine. He better keep saying the word Heisman Trophy, Heisman Trophy, Heisman Trophy until they get sick of hearing it. Because that's all he's done for Louisville since returning. So Kentucky's now favored to win every one of their last games. And if it holds form, Kentucky will finish the season 10-2 and basically have the non-college football playoff bowl of their choice. Who saw that coming in August? We admit, we sure didn't. Now, is this because Kentucky has become the greatest team known to mankind? No, they haven't. ESPN FBI still has them 31st right now. They're not a great team, but they've caught every team in their division, except Georgia, at the absolute perfect time, when all of them are down. And yes, they've gotten a few breaks. Probably shouldn't have won that game against Missouri. But for all the talk about this is Kentucky's dream season, their breakout season, oh, it's a season to remember. All they got to do is just hold serve and they'll finish 10-2. The greatest season in most of our lifetimes. Has it really been that successful? Has it really been that far ahead of expectations? Against the point spread out in Las Vegas, Kentucky has won 4 times. They've lost 5. So if you've put $1 on Kentucky every game against the spread, you've lost $1.50 on the season. So much for that dream season. They're not even living up to the expectations out in the desert. So what does that losing against the spread record tell me? It tells me that Kentucky has caught a lot of teams at the absolute perfect time. And although they've compiled a 7-2 record, they're still not living up to expectations of the wise guys out in the desert. So Big Blue Nation, enjoy this. Enjoy Kentucky's best season in decades, in over 40 years. Enjoy it while you can. The success might be fleeting because as all UK football fans know, success is very fleeting. A good year is usually followed by several bad ones. Just ask any basketball school. Just ask Kansas in 2007. Oh, and don't forget, everybody in the SEC East seems to be on their way up again. So that window of opportunity of doing well in the SEC East, even during a miracle season, it might be closing right before your eyes.
They're off.
Oh, but who cares about football? We don't want to mess with a losing team like Kentucky football anymore. We want a basketball game. And by gollies, we've got it tonight. Number 2, Kentucky. Number 4, Duke. In Indianapolis, Indiana, 9:30 Eastern time, approximate start. Old kooks like me probably can't stay up that late. By the way, who scheduled this game on the same night as election night? Pure genius for whoever did that, because I'll tell you what, seeing that game tip off will mean 2 great things. Number 1, college basketball season has started. And number 2, I don't have to watch any more of these stupid Andy Barr, Amy McGrath commercials anymore. I don't care who wins. Just get those 2 off my television. We're not like other people in this market who dip and dabble in politics. We stick to sports. That's where we make our money. Well, not so much right now, but we're working on it. But Kentucky and Duke face off tonight. I was reading the Herald Leader, and Ben Roberts had a very long article in which he asked several media types who they thought would win the game. And of all the people who responded, every one of them from the state of Kentucky or the ones that had affiliations with Kentucky, they all said Kentucky would win the game. Every single one of them. In fact, in the entire article, only 2 people disagreed and went with Duke. And those 2 people were from Raleigh, North Carolina and Charlotte, North Carolina. I can't believe it. You mean to tell me there's bias amongst these journalists? Unbelievable. I'm not trying to toot my own horn here, but I'll tell it to you like it is. If I think Duke is going to win, I'll tell you they're going to win. I don't have to worry about my phony baloney job. I don't have any friends here, obviously. Listen to this show. You can hear why. The last show I was on, the host always said, "You're the biggest asshole I've ever heard." But that's how you got to play the game in sports. Heaven forbid I actually tell the truth. But all these other people, especially in this market, they have to protect their phony baloney jobs. So they have to pick Kentucky, whether they believe it or not. Hey, I killed Mark Story of the Herald Leader on this show for weeks for saying Kentucky would win 9 games in football this year. Hey, he was right. I was wrong. And in fact, last Friday, I tweeted him saying I will even give him a chance on this podcast to take a victory lap and gloat over his win. And like everybody else in this market, other than John Clay, he refused to answer me. What a shock. I'm a bad guy. Why? Because I tell you what I really think is going to happen based on statistical and historical data. That makes me the bad guy around here. But I digress. So let me save you a little time in reading that little Ben Roberts article about the predictions from the media types all across Kentucky and North Carolina. If they're from Kentucky, they're picking the Cats. If they're from North Carolina, they're picking Duke. What a shocker. So the line is out right now, Kentucky a 1.5-point favorite in this game. But what the heck do we know about Duke? They have all these freshmen. They basically this year have out-Kentuckied Kentucky, if that's possible. They're the ones with all the freshmen. Kentucky's got some freshmen, but they've actually got a couple of guys that's back from last year, too, and a transfer senior. So in a shocking role of reversal, Duke is actually Kentucky, and Kentucky is Duke. But we'll find out tonight whether Kentucky has really turned into a football town or whether they've turned like the rest of America, living in big boy world, where college basketball is literally a one-month-a-year sport. Just wake me up when I can fill out my brackets. So in terms of trying to predict this game, what do we really have on it? What can we really take from this? Let's just look at the coaches. What does Calipari do out of conference in the regular season against ranked teams? In 9 games in November since he's been at Kentucky, he's 6-2-1 against the spread against non-conference ranked teams in the month of November. Now, as the calendar wears on, he gets worse. He's 9-8 in December, 1-2 in January. Oh, and by the way, Calipari 9-3-1 versus non-conference ranked teams on neutral courts, no matter what month of the year it is. But what has Coach K done? Since 2005, Coach K 8-4 against the spread versus non-conference ranked teams in November. And since 2005, Coach K 14-9 against the spread versus non-conference ranked teams on neutral courts. So what does all that mean? Both these coaches are pretty good, especially when they play these early season money grab games against other big time programs. But we don't know what to expect from Kentucky. We certainly don't know what to expect from Duke, and Kentucky's only a 1.5-point favorite. In fact, Ken Pomeroy has Kentucky losing this game by 1 point. ESPN BPI ratings has Kentucky winning this game by 1 point. So nobody knows. Why do you think the point spread is literally a toss-up? But we're going to get down on this game, and we'll tell you how we get down on this game and a couple other games involving ranked college basketball teams, including the other game in Indianapolis tomorrow night, Michigan State and Kansas. We'll give you our trifecta of winners tonight later on in the show.
They're off.
Well, Kentucky's out of the college football race now, and there are only 9 teams. If you go by historical data and what this committee has done in the past, there's only 9 teams now that can actually say that we're playing for the college football playoff. And the rules are very simple. You have to be from a Power 5 conference, smell you later, 8-0 UCF, and you have to have 1 loss or less. And if you throw in Notre Dame, which sadly we have to throw in Notre Dame because they bring in the most money, but if you throw in Notre Dame, there's only 9 teams that can say that left. From the ACC, Clemson, that's it. From the SEC, Alabama and Georgia. From the Big 12, West Virginia, Oklahoma. From the Big 10, Michigan, Ohio State. From the Pac-12, Washington State. And then Notre Dame. That's it. That's the list. If I didn't say your team, they're not making it. I don't care what they do the rest of the way. Basically, from the numbers, Clemson and Alabama are pretty much in. As long as they don't lose twice, they're going to make it. Notre Dame can't lose, but the rest of the season, they have to play Florida State, Syracuse, and USC. 20 years ago, they wouldn't have had a chance to win one of those games. Now, looks like they'll probably win all 3 and make the playoff. But the 4th team, your guess is as good as mine. That's why they play the next month. But those are the only 9 teams that can make it. Everybody else is just playing for slaps and tickles. By the way, there's a new biggest jerk in college football. His name is Tom Herman, which is shocking considering he learned his wares under Urban Meyer. Yet another big jerk in college football. Upon his loss to West Virginia over the weekend, Herman said that Will Grier was taunting his team when he reached the ball out over the goal line on a 2-point conversion. He was not taunting anybody at all. He was simply trying to score by holding the ball out there. If you see the replay, you'll understand what I'm saying. Tom Herman crying over everything. By the way, this Tom Herman's the same guy who mocked Drew Locke last year after Drew Locke did a little dance in a bowl game against Texas. And then Texas came back and won, and Herman did the little dance again just to mock Drew Locke. Yeah, this guy's a jackass, and you can quote us on that. Oh, another big event happened in Kentucky over the weekend, the Breeders' Cup. Now, we're not horse racing experts on this show. Why? Meh, we couldn't pick a horse racing winner if we had the sports almanac from Biff and Back to the Future. But we'd like to congratulate one man named Michael Wells Rhody, who almost was a part of the Breeders' Cup on Saturday. He's a 24-year-old who, shockingly, was drunk as a skunk. He jumped on a horse in a restricted area and tried to ride it out on the track. Hey, if you're losing your bets and you're drunk, I'm going to show these people what they can do with my money. Way to go, Michael Wells, roadie. God knows what was going through your mind at the time, but I bet it was really funny. College basketball starting tonight, and there's going to be a banner raised at one of the arenas. Is it going to be at Villanova? No. Is it going to be at one of the teams that made the Final Four? Loyola Chicago? No. It's going to be at the UMBC Arena, and they're going to lift a banner to the rafters celebrating their win over Virginia in the first round of the tournament last year. Really? You win one game in the tournament and you're lifting a banner? What happened in the next game? I know you should act like you've been there before, and I know UMBC has not been there before, but can you really raise a banner off one win in the NCAA tournament? And granted, it's the first time ever a 16 seed has beaten a number one seed. But do you really lift a banner for that? It's kind of like the Atlanta Braves and walking into their stadium and seeing all those little pennants out in the outfield for those 14 straight division championships they won. Good for you. You won the division. What happened to the playoffs? Oh, yeah. You lost. Every year. Except one. A strike year. So congratulations, UMBC. You made history last year in the tournament. But I don't think that deserves a banner. Pro football, the Buffalo Bills are the worst team in the league. It's not even close. Their offense is ranking with the 1992 Seattle Seahawks, and who could forget that team, as the worst offensive team in NFL history. Nathan Peterman, the interception machine, got the loss on Sunday, prompting former Buffalo Bill first-round pick E.J. Manuel to tweet questions about how Nathan Peterman gets all these chances and throws all these interceptions. While he wasn't nearly the bad player Peterman was, but he's been kicked out of the league and is still looking for a job. You know what? He's 100% right. Manuel is better than Peterman. So why isn't he in the league? Is it a black-white thing? Maybe. Is it a money thing? That's got a little bit to do with it. Why? E.J. Manuel was a first-round pick. Peterman, a fifth-round pick. Life's about expectations. If you're a first-round pick and you're no good, people don't want any part of you. If you're a fifth-round pick and you're no good, people will give you another chance. And in the NFL, a quarterback, it helps if you're a white dude. Let's just be honest. Le'Veon Bell appears to be on his way back to Pittsburgh to finally report. He's missed out on millions already this year, but the Steelers are actually playing well right now without him. James Conner is actually just as good as Le'Veon Bell. And the coach of the Steelers said, "We'd rather have volunteers than hostages." If Le'Veon Bell does report this week, you might want to bet against the Steelers because there's going to be some chaos in that locker room. In the year 2003, flip phones were a thing. Joe Horn of the New Orleans Saints, who I'm sure many of you had on your fantasy teams at the time because he was a top 10 fantasy wide receiver, pulled a flip phone out from underneath the goalpost and acted like he was making a call on a Sunday night football game on ESPN. Yesterday, Michael Thomas of the Saints did the same thing as almost an homage to Joe Horn. And Joe Buck and Troy Aikman acted like it didn't even happen. They acted like they didn't even remember it. I admit, I had to go back and look at it and remind myself what year it took place. I couldn't believe it had already been 15 years. And I'm very old, but I digress. But really? You can't even reference it? You can't even do a little flashback video there, Fox? Michael Thomas got robbed. Oh, by the way, he cost his team 15 yards at a very crucial time of the game. And if the Saints had lost, you don't think he'd be hearing about it everywhere today? Of course he would. So props to Joe Horn and Michael Thomas. But not to the Fox broadcast team, which acted like they didn't even know what the heck just happened. Ugh.
Green is good.
Cash. Cold. That's what I need.
And now with his picks for today's games, the man who's right 52% of the time, Smooth Jimmy Apollo.
Well, I don't know. Denver.
Woohoo! Denver! Yeah!
Winning's one of those rare commodities on earth that money cannot buy until you called me.
All right, it's Mac Daddy Stogie time. We have not one, not two, but three games that we would like to go over for tonight. Game number one, the lid lifter in Indianapolis, Michigan State against Kansas. Michigan State opens a 6-point underdog in this game. We have a lot of gambling rules when it comes to college basketball. We're going to give you quite a few of them this year on this show. Top 10 teams, when they face off, we like to go against the team that's getting the most public money. In a matchup of top 10 teams, we always want to take the team getting the much less money. And as of Tuesday morning, that team is definitely Michigan State. Kansas is ranked number one. Looks like a good time for us to see them struggle. Give us Michigan State plus the 6 in a matchup of top 10 teams where we're definitely just fading the public. Michigan State and 6, pick number 1. Let's go down to Bowling Green, Kentucky. The Hilltoppers, whose coach is right up there with anybody in terms of questionable recruiting tactics, Rick Stansberry. His Hilltoppers travel all the way to Washington to take on the Huskies. Markel Fultz ain't walking through that door tomorrow night. You're going to give me 7 points in Western at Washington? We'll take them. Why? Contrarianism, baby. There's a lot of public money right now on Washington. Very little on Western, traveling 2,500 miles just to play this game. Give us the Toppers on the road against number 25 Washington. That's game number 2. And the game we're all waiting for, Duke and Kentucky. We went over the coaching records in these preseason non-conference games, both Calipari and Coach K. Very impressive against the spread in these type situations. But we have 2 things that we're looking at this game. In top 10 matchups, just like the one we talked about earlier, we're going to fade the public. Since 2005, if you fade the public and go against where the money's going in these matchups, since 2005, you'll hit 87 and lose 55. That's 61%. I like those odds. And as of early Tuesday morning, who's getting the most money? Who's got the most money on them? Duke. They have 58% of the tickets. They have 80% of the money. Why? Mainly because Duke is getting 1.5 points. This may be the only time all year that you hear us say this. We're taking Kentucky. Give us Kentucky. We're going to lay the 1.5 points because everybody seems to be betting on Duke. Give us Kentucky. If you're a regular listener to this show, you're as shocked as we are. We're taking Kentucky. Lay the 1.5 points. Give us the Cats on Tuesday night against Duke. Your Mac Daddy Stogies are the Knights. And you can take those 3 bad boys to the desert and smoke them.
He's always like that. He's always telling fibs, lying. Wait, when do you ever tell the truth?
You're a good-looking guy.
What?
Lied again, didn't I?
And that does it for the Tuesday, November 6th edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. As always, we thank you so much for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, at Bottom Line Lex. Hopefully we're going to be able to get some guests on a regular basis coming up soon as basketball season now begins. But until the next time, as always, may the winners be yours.